Ever imagine yourself like in a partnership where everything's running smooth, right? And then, bam, you find out your partner's been, well, let's just say cutting corners, and now the FDIC is knocking on your door. It's a nightmare scenario, but it's precisely what went down in the case of FDIC v. Braymore Associates.
Yeah, it really gets to the heart of how partnerships work, you know, the liability issues and how a tiny legal detail can make a huge difference.
Absolutely. So let's set the scene here. We're talking about the State Bank of Clearing in Illinois. It fails, and the FDIC steps in to clean up the mess, right? What do they find when they start digging through the bank's records?
Well, they uncover this whole web of loans, and a lot of them just seem, well, off. And then it gets even more interesting when they realize that Paul Bierre, one of the bank's directors, is also a partner in Braymore Associates. And you can probably guess where this is going. Many of those shady loans were going through straw borrowers straight to Braymore.
Okay, so we've got one guy with two really important hats on, bank director and partner in the company, getting all these loans. Sounds like a classic conflict of interest waiting to explode. What did the FDIC do?
So the FDIC, acting as the receiver for the failed bank, they sue Braymore, trying to get those funds back. But, and here's where it gets a little wild, the FDIC doesn't just stay in their lane as receiver. They transfer the assets to their corporate side, and that seemingly small move throws a wrench into the whole jurisdiction question.
You know, it's amazing to me how a small legal thing like that can have such a big impact. Can you break down that jurisdiction issue a little more?
Sure. So it comes down to, like, when does the FDIC operate under federal law versus state law? The Seventh Circuit Court ultimately decided that because the assets went to FDIC corporate, it wasn't just about the failed bank's estate anymore, you see. It now affected the FDIC's corporate interests, which meant, bam, federal jurisdiction.
That's a big point, right? Especially if you're involved in a case with the FDIC. Knowing the ins and outs of jurisdiction can be just as important as the facts of the case.
Absolutely. But let's get back to the main point of this case. Can Braymore, the partnership, be held liable for Bear's actions, even if the other partners were totally clueless about what he was doing? This brings the Uniform Partnership Act, the UPA, into play.
This is the part that really gets me. How does the UPA factor into all of this?
Well, there's Section 12 of the UPA, right? It basically says that what one partner knows, the whole partnership is assumed to know, imputed knowledge, they call it. But, and this is key, there is an exception when it comes to fraud that's committed against the partnership.
So if Beard had been trying to, rip off his own partnership, Braymore might have had a way out of this.
You would think, but that's not how the court saw it. They said Barry's actions, while definitely not okay, were actually meant to help Braymore, even if he went about it the wrong way.
So even though he acted unethically and in the end caused harm, the court didn't buy that he was intentionally trying to cheat his own partners. Man, that's another layer of complexity to this whole thing. What else did the court look at when making their decision?
They also dug into Section 13 of the UPA. It's all about the liability of partners for, you know, shady stuff that happens as part of normal business operations.
Right. But how do you even decide what ordinary business means in a case like this? It seems pretty subjective.
Well, the court basically said that Bera's actions, even though they were wrong, happened so often, so consistently, that it was like pattern, you know? So they considered this behavior, even though it was improper, to be part of Braymore's ordinary business. Like, because he kept funneling money to Braymore through these questionable loans, it became part of how they did things, at least according to the court.
So basically, even if other partners are totally in the dark, they can still get burned. That just seems, I don't know, kind of unfair.
It might seem that way, but the court's decision really emphasizes this thing called strict liability in partnerships. It's like when you become partners, you're not just saying, hey, this person's good at what they do. You're also saying, I trust their judgment and I trust them to act ethically. It's like being a guarantor for their behavior.
So the takeaway here is choose your business partners carefully, right? Like really
Well,
carefully.
yeah, big time. You got to do your due diligence, go beyond just looking at their resume, talk to people, check their background, really get a sense of who they are, you know?
It's almost like hiring someone, right?
Yeah.
You don't just look at their CV. You want to know how they work, how they fit in with the company culture.
Exactly. And once you've got your partners, you need systems in place to keep things in check, make sure everyone's behaving ethically, think internal controls.
What would that look like, practically speaking? Give us some examples.
Depends on the partnership, right? But you might need multiple people to sign off on financial stuff, have regular audits of the accounts, or set up a clear way for people to report anything that seems fishy, like a whistleblower policy.
It's about transparency. and making sure people feel okay speaking up if something's wrong. Can't just be all about blind trust. You gotta verify, like they say.
Right on. This case is interesting because it's so different from how things work with corporations, where you have the corporate veil protecting individual shareholders. Partnerships don't have that same level of protection.
Can you explain that a bit more? I think some of our listeners might not be familiar with that legal concept.
Sure. So in a corporation, the corporate veil, it's like a separation between the company and the people who own shares in it. This often protects those shareholders from being held personally liable if the company goes into debt or has other obligations. But with partnerships, that veil is much thinner. Partners are way more exposed to the consequences of each other's actions.
So with a partnership, you're all in the same boat, so to speak. Everyone either sinks or swims together, which is why this case is so relevant. So let's say you have a partner in a medical LLC who's referring patients to her own imaging center, but she's not telling anyone she owns it. Could the LLC be in trouble?
That's a great question. Section 13 of the UPA would definitely come into play there. If those referrals are seen as part of the LLC's normal business, then yeah, the LLC could potentially be held liable.
But what about the whole knowledge thing? If the other partners in the LLC didn't know about this self-referral scheme, would they still be on the hook?
That's where Section 12 comes in, that imputed knowledge thing. If there is a pattern of these referrals happening, then the knowledge of that partner's actions could be considered as the knowledge of the whole LLC. Unless, of course, you could prove that the partner was intentionally trying to defraud the LLC. But if her actions, even though they were unethical, were ultimately meant to help the LLC financially, it becomes a lot harder to argue that she intended to defraud it.
So even if those other partners were completely clueless, the fact that those self-referrals were happening over and over, and maybe even bringing in money for the LLC, that could be enough for the whole partnership to be held liable.
Yep. That's the kind of risk that cases like FDIC v. Braymore Associates really highlight. It shows why you've got to be proactive. You know, you need clear communication and a system for monitoring things within the partnership. You can't just rely on blind trust.
This whole case is a big wake-up call, right? For anyone in a partnership, I mean.
Yeah.
It's not just about finding the right partners. It's about managing the relationship, making sure everyone's on the same page. Any final thoughts for our listeners today?
It's not enough to just say, be careful, right? Uh-huh. You need some actual strategies for managing risk in partnerships. What can our listeners really do?
Exactly. Where should they start?
Well, first things first, you got to have a solid partnership agreement, like super solid. If you've got vague language about roles and responsibilities and how decisions get made, you're just asking for trouble. You want to be crystal clear about what each partner can and can't do, how big decisions are going to be handled, and what happens if there's a disagreement. Think of it like a prenup for your business. It's there to protect everyone if things go sideways.
I love that analogy. It's like you're setting those expectations and boundaries right from the get-go. But a partnership agreement is just the beginning, right? What else can partners do to protect themselves?
Oh, man. Communication, communication, communication. Can't emphasize that enough. You need regular partner meetings, got to keep everyone in the loop, make sure everyone's on the same page. And financial transparency is huge. Partners should be able to see the books, ask questions, you know, really understand where the money's going. But maybe the most important thing is creating a culture where partners feel comfortable talking about potential conflicts of interest. Like if something seems off, they can speak up without being afraid.
So it's not just having rules on paper. It's about that environment, that trust and accountability.
Exactly. And while those things are super important, don't forget about professional advice. Having a lawyer look over your partnership agreement, an accountant check the financials, a business advisor to guide you. It's like having a team of experts in your corner, you know, helping you navigate all the tricky parts of partnership law and ethics.
So being proactive and getting that expert advice, those are some key takeaways from our deep dive today.
For sure. And remember, this FDIC v. Braymore Associates case, it's a big reminder that if you don't take these precautions, the consequences can be way worse down the road.
This has been such an interesting conversation. The FDIC v. Braymore Associates case, it really shines a light on those things we don't always think about, like the complexities of partnership liability, that whole idea of imputed knowledge, and how crucial it is to manage risk proactively. Any lawyer who works with partnerships or anyone even thinking about forming one, they need to know about this case.
Totally agree. What we've talked about today can help partners avoid those legal traps and build stronger, more sustainable businesses, you know, relationships that can actually last.
So as we wrap up today, we want to leave you with one last thought. How can you use what we've discussed to make your own partnership stronger, to safeguard your business ventures? It's something to think about as you navigate the ever-changing world of business law and ethics. Until next time, keep learning, keep asking those tough questions, and keep diving deep.